My name is Mike Elgin, and this is my Food and Technology Podcast number 16. My guest this week is FarmBot founder Rory Aronson. Here comes the FatCast. Rory Aronson is a mechanical engineer who's building a world where gardening and small-scale farming is done by robots, so you don't have to. Best of all, everything about his FarmBot project is open source. You can buy one right now. Here's my interview with Rory Aronson. Rory Aronson, welcome to the FatCast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Really glad you're here. Now, let's start right with the basic question. What is the FarmBot?
All right. So FarmBot is an open source CNC farming machine that is designed for small scale precision food production. So it's kind of like a big 3D printer. It moves around in the XYZ space, but instead of extruding plastic, it plants seeds in the ground and then it waters them. And it uses sensors to learn about the soil, the plants, and the environment in order to farm smarter. So what we're really trying to build here is kind of an all-in-one food production system that is fully automated and can kind of make food for somebody in the background while they're out living their life, going to work, attending school, etc.
Now, you said CNC. What is CNC?
CNC stands for computer numerically controlled. So it just means that FarmBot is completely controlled by the computer. You don't actually have to get out there with your hands and operate a shovel. It's all being controlled by a computer.
That's great news for me because I'm not very good at operating a shovel. Now, what is OpenFarm?
So OpenFarm is a related project that I started, and it is a website and database that describes how to grow plants. So it's very similar to a cooking recipes website where, you know, you go on to allrecipes.com and you search for lasagna and you might find 10 different recipes for lasagna. Some have meat, some have three cheeses, some have eggplants. And what you're going to do is you're going to choose the best one for you based on what type of lasagna you want. Open Farm works very similarly, but for growing plants. So you go on there and you type in basil and you're going to see a bunch of different what we call growing guides that describe how to grow a plant based on, is it on a balcony? Is it in a greenhouse? Are you doing it organically or conventionally or this or that? And you'll find the best growing guide for you. And that database is not only available to average gardeners or farmers, but also to users of FarmBot. So FarmBot is tied to OpenFarm and accesses that information via an API. So if you have a FarmBot, you don't actually have to know how to grow anything. You can just use the data that's coming from OpenFarm.
You know, a lot of people talk about Tesla, and I think that when people think of Tesla, they think, okay, Tesla's cool because it's electric vehicles, or it's an electric vehicle that's fast like a sports car, or it's an electric vehicle that's very safe. I tend to think that what's great about Tesla is the way that they capture all kinds of user data, exactly what the driver is doing when they're using autopilot, when they're applying the brakes, when they're doing this, that, and the other thing. They upload those back into Tesla and informs how they can optimize the computer systems that really drive the Tesla. It sounds to me like you're working towards something a lot like that, where lots and lots of people are using FarmBot and OpenFarm, and they are getting data from the soil. They're doing inputs into the soil, and then they're getting outputs in terms of information. And is the idea that that data, that information, comes back to a central place, which can then be shared by other users?
Yeah, that is something that we're interested in. So part of being open source is that when one person figures out an interesting way to build a tool or a piece of hardware for FarmBot or a piece of software that FarmBot can use or a piece of data that can go into OpenFarm. Once one person figures that out, it can be shared and used by everybody, much like how the individual actions of a Tesla driver help improve the entire Tesla fleet. And so we're looking at all the ways that we can kind of optimize that data collection and the dissemination of that data so that everybody can benefit from an individual's actions. Of course, privacy is always a concern, so all of that type of data collection is opt-in. If you want to contribute back to the open source community, you can, but you can remain totally private and anonymous in what you're doing as well.
Your video is a really kick-ass video. I've watched it a few times purely for entertainment. It's just amazing to see it planting seeds, watering things, dealing with weeds, doing all the things that it does.
3 years ago, I had an idea for a new paradigm of food production. The idea lies at the intersection of automation, the open source DIY maker movement, and small-scale polycrop farming. And over the last 3 years, a small, dedicated team and I have been working to make this idea a reality. Introducing FarmBot Genesis, humanity's first open source CNC farming machine.
Very, very cool stuff. But exactly what at what stage is this entire project? Is anybody using the FarmBot platform right at this moment?
Yes and no. We're pretty early stage. So we've been developing the project and the technology for about 3 years now, but it's only been three of us. It's been myself and two software developers. And we have an occasional contribution from somebody else, but it's primarily three people. So what you see in the video is to some degree a prototype. And what we're now doing with our crowdfunding campaign is we're trying to find early adopters, people who are makers, hackers, DIY food enthusiasts who want to dive in with us and help grow this new technology platform with us. So it's pretty early stage, and it's certainly limited in functionality in comparison to where we want it to be one day. But what you saw in the video was all real. It all happened over a three-month period where FarmBot did plant the seeds, it did water them, and it did, you know, successfully grow a great garden that myself and my roommates were able to harvest vegetables from.
You do have a crowdsource campaign. Can you talk about the crowdfunding campaign? Where are you at with the fundraising?
Yeah, so we set up a campaign to, again, find these early adopters, people who want to purchase a FarmBot kit to put it together, to build their house and to start experimenting with this, as well as actually, you know, get the product of FarmBot, which is fresh food. And so we set a goal of raising $100,000, which is equivalent to about 30, 35 FarmBots. And we met that goal in about 2 weeks of time. Now we're almost finished up with the campaign. It's going to end at the end of July here. And we've already raised now $320,000. So we're now well over triple our goal. And we've sold just over 100 FarmBots. So it's pretty exciting for us to see kind of where the community is going to go.
Congratulations. That's very, very cool. Now, if you pay and you buy a FarmBot, it's called a Genesis kit. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we imagine one day there's going to be many different types of FarmBots. Just like there's many different types of laptops or cars, and each laptop or car has its own, you know, brand name. So these kits are the FarmBot Genesis kits, which is the beginning of this project. It's the very first kit, the very first FarmBot that's going to be available to people. So we imagine in the future we'll have different FarmBot kits, some that are bigger, some that are maybe for vertical gardens, some that are optimized for a certain type of growing, maybe hydroponics instead of soil-based. And those FarmBots will be under a different name.
Are you thinking about expanding into farms, like very large-scale FarmBot systems?
Yes and no. I think we're definitely interested in the commercial space, but not in the industrial space. If you look at industrial ag, that's all pretty much already mechanized, optimized, and FarmBot probably doesn't really have a role there. But on the small scale commercial, you know, something like a more local farmer who's doing stuff in a greenhouse, absolutely. I think FarmBot can optimize that, the production processes there, and can really make a big difference.
Now, why did you decide to go open source? I mean, why didn't you just build a product, keep all your corporate secrets, and make a fortune? I mean, that's what Mark Zuckerberg would have done.
Sure. So to me, you know, food is so fundamental. It's everybody eats three times a day. Now, if I have food, I would like to share it with you. You know, I'll invite you over to my house for a potluck type of thing. If I have tools or ideas or knowledge for how to grow food, I think, you know, that should be freely shared as well. So to me, to develop this technology and keep it secret is not really in the spirit of humanity. It's kind of greedy to do that. So I think open source is just how it has to be. And I think it's somewhat of a shame how little the ag industry is currently open source. Most of it is very proprietary and secretive, and what's mine is mine and you can't have it because we're competing. I don't really view it that way. I view it as, well, we're all in this together and we all have mouths to feed and stomachs to fill. So why don't we do our best to share all this information, this technology, this knowledge, and you know, then we can all eat.
Well, you've got a lot to learn about becoming the next Monsanto. I mean, like if you look at farmers nowadays, they can't fix their own tractors because that's all copyrighted and owned by the Deere Corporation. They can't use the seeds that their own crops produce because the it's patented, and the genes in those seeds are owned by Monsanto and other agri-giants. And that's really, you know, that general theme is what plagues modern farmers for the most part. They just are owned by the banks that they owe money to. They're owned by the companies that provide the seeds and the equipment to them, and they really are sort of locked into a corner. It's really tragic to see, which is one of the reasons why it seems to me that the FarmBot idea could and should be applied to commercial agriculture. And you mentioned everything's already automated, but not really. I mean, right now, the way the automation works in industrial agriculture is it's all based on monocultures. So you go in the Midwest, you go to Nebraska or something like that, and it's just hundreds of gazillions of acres of corn after corn after corn. Mm-hmm. The soil is dead. They're using GMO crops that can enable the crops to withstand incredibly high doses of pesticides and herbicides and stuff like that. But if you could imagine a farm bot type of farm, you wouldn't need monoculture, would you? You could plant, you know, every row could be a different plant, which would support the others. It would greatly reduce pests. It would bolster the soil, and you wouldn't need herbicides because the FarmBot technology could take care of the weeds the second they sprout. Shouldn't something like this be applied to commercial agriculture and get us away from, you know, herbicides, pesticides, and monoculture?
Yes. Though I think that the FarmBot platform is not the right platform for the really large scale. I think the better platform for the large scale is where you see John Deere going today, which is smarter systems. They have GPS auto steer. They have cameras that are looking down and monitoring things and detecting weeds. So I think what would be better on the very large scale is some of the principles of FarmBot, you know, automation, precision, growing a polycrop, using very active mechanical weed removal, but not doing it on a track-based system, doing it more on a free-driving tractor system. I think that makes more sense for the large scale. And then, you know, to your points here, I think the principles of FarmBot and the principles of being open source and sharing that knowledge, I think will eventually disrupt the large big ag industry. Like you said, farmers don't really own their farm. They don't own their tractor. They don't own their food in any way. It's all owned by a few mega corporations. And I think open source is a path out of that, you know, through creative licensing and through the sharing of knowledge and hardware and seeds and all of that. We can carve out a path out of what she said is a very tragic system right now.
Your site, you mentioned cameras, and of course, a lot of precision agriculture uses satellite photography, but also the tractors use cameras to guide sort of the almost self-driving equipment. But your site offers instructions for adding a webcam to a farm bot, presumably so that people can sort of go on vacation and they can check in on their garden or their plants and their farm bot itself. And of course others could monitor it. It'd be cool if I had one. I'd want to have a camera on there and just sort of make it a public webcam. Do you have a camera on your prototype FarmBot?
I do. Yeah. If you actually go onto our web application, which is where you control and configure FarmBot, there's a spot where you can enter in the URL of your own webcam. But the default is actually the URL to my webcam, looking at the FarmBot that you saw in the video.
Oh, that's cool. So you're a mechanical engineer by training, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you have a couple of software people. And I'm curious about how much, I mean, we're sort of right at the beginning of an enormous revolution in the widely distributed availability of artificial intelligence. How much AI is in this FarmBot idea? And if there is AI, how is that being developed?
Sure. So there's none right now. What we're developing right now still is like the baseline platform for just controlling FarmBot and using a lot of kind of manual input from the user to build up the growing recipes, the growing guides. Eventually, though, we do hope to augment that with artificial intelligence. So looking at FarmBot becoming its own self-managing device where you kind of set it up and FarmBot figures out the rest. It figures out what type of soil you have based on camera photos. It figures out how well the plants are doing based on photos from the leaf structure and the color. It figures out via the weather and your growing preferences and all sorts of other factors how best to grow the plants that you need. So we definitely want to move in that direction, though right now there is currently no artificial intelligence.
Now, how could the FarmBot idea affect other issues like the environment or the cost of food? I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who are planting urban gardens. I do know that in the United States, there's more square acreage on the whole devoted to lawns than growing food, which is an astonishing statistic. But, people who have a little patch of land can grow a garden. People have community gardens in cities. There's people even have gardens on skyscraper rooftops and so on. But what are the environmental or cost of food issues that that you're looking at with the FarmBot idea?
Sure. So we've done a few analyses on this. It's important to note that the analyses that we've done are theoretical right now. We don't have empirical data to back this up, but the initial analyses are looking really promising. So for the carbon emissions of FarmBot, you have two types of emissions. You have one, which is the embodied emissions, which is how much energy and CO2 had to be emitted just to build FarmBot. That's a certain amount based on the materials that go into it. And it's not a huge amount, especially if you compare it to what it takes to build a John Deere tractor or like a highway or a supermarket or something like that. So that's a pretty small amount. Then you have the CO2 emissions stemming from the usage of FarmBot. How much electricity does it use? How much water does it use, et cetera? And so what we're finding is when we compare FarmBot grown vegetables to traditional store-bought vegetables, like a U.S. average, FarmBot performs about 30% better when it comes from a CO2 standpoint. If you power FarmBot with alternative energy, like from a solar panel, then there's basically no competition. FarmBot grown veggies are essentially zero emission, perhaps even negative because the plants themselves are absorbing CO2 from the air as they grow. So that's looking really promising for us. From a cost perspective, it's also looking great. Again, there's two types of costs. You have your startup cost and then your ongoing costs to manage and maintain your FarmBot. And then you compare that with the cost of buying vegetables, a similar amount of vegetables from the grocery store or the farmer's market or some other method. And that's also looking good. We're looking at, with the current devices, a return on investment of 3 to 5 years. And that would be if you normally like to purchase organic vegetables at an average U.S. market rate. Now, as we progress with the technology, the FarmBot kits will come down in price. And we're also hoping to offer larger kits in the future to grow more food for not much more cost. And so at that point, we expect the return on investment to drop even below 1 year. So if you purchase a FarmBot, it will have paid for itself and more in savings within 1 year timeframe.
And so what is the current price for a kit, and what do you expect it to come down to?
The current price is $2,900 for a kit, which is definitely pricey. It's similar to a high-end 3D printer. But like I said, it's early technology, and all new technologies start out expensive and come down in price. Look at Tesla for that prime example. The Roadster, their first model, was a high-end sports car, very expensive, low volume. That's where FarmBot's at right now. We have a more expensive kit It's helping to fund further development, and we're doing relatively low volume. Like I said, about 100 units have been sold so far. So what that's going to do is allow us to bring the cost down over time, continue improving the technology. And we hope one day, you know, maybe that's in 3 years, maybe it's in 5 years, to bring the cost down to about $1,000, so that FarmBot could be purchased as what we like to call a home appliance. And you set it up and you kind of forget about it and it just works in the background. Just like most people have a refrigerator, most people have, you know, a microwave. And these things are there and they provide the utility at relatively low cost and relatively low effort from the consumer. That's where we hope FarmBot to go.
You talked about the environmental footprint. What about water? You and I are from California, which has no water ever, and of course grows a huge percentage of the United States farm produce, and water is an enormous issue, especially around where you live in Central California and north of there. It's really a major thing. What is the difference between a farm bot and growing equivalent number of vegetables in terms of water usage?
We haven't done analysis on that yet, but you know, from an objective standpoint, FarmBot will outperform traditional agriculture because FarmBot is tending to the plants in a very precise, data-driven, individual manner compared to traditional ag growing tons of plants in a, sort of a blanket. You know, this regimen for the plants will apply to all of them. It's not quite as efficient. So, you know, I don't know how much FarmBot will outperform, but I think from an objective standpoint, it will at least do as good, if not slightly better, than traditional ag.
Yeah, it seems kind of obvious that it would save a lot of water because when you look at the video, essentially it's kind of speeded up, but the thing like takes the seeds and plants them very precisely in a very exact place in the raised garden bed, and then it comes back with the water, and it says it hovers the water directly over where the seed is and gives it a squirt and then goes to the next one, and you can see that the soil is actually dry between the sort of wet spots that have been watered, whereas if you look at a regular garden, people are just with the hose just spraying the area.
Exactly.
And there's water going everywhere, and so it looks very, you know, it looks, especially with software tweaking and optimization, you could just use exactly the amount of water you need and not a drop more. And that's an exciting idea. Now, if you look to the future, let's call it 5 years. Let's be pessimists and say in 5 years, you'll have FarmBot products on the market that people can actually buy. It costs them $1,000. And in 1 year, they can grow, say, $1,200 worth of vegetables. In other words, like you say, it pays for itself in less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then these things, because of that, because of those economics, it's possible to extend to anyone with the space, even if they're very poor, an option for you make payments on this thing, and those payments are actually lower than what it would cost you to go to the store, farmer's market, or whatever, and buy the produce that you're growing. And ultimately, and then after that, it's the price of seeds or, you know, soil or whatever it is, you know, the very, very low cost for keeping it going without any additional cost for the equipment. This speaks to a kind of a breathtaking vision of the future, doesn't it? I mean, you people growing their own food, it's organic, it's not being shipped, it's the environmental costs of shipping and refrigeration, all the other things that go into produce. It's a no-brainer for anybody. In fact, it gets to the point where you can't afford to not grow your own food. Is this going to be putting people out of business? Like, what's the impact on farm workers and the farm industry? Is this something you've thought about?
A little bit, yeah. You know, I think what you just described is very much where we want to take the technology. We want it to be accessible. We want it to outperform store-bought veggies in every way, you know, from a CO2 standpoint, from a time it takes to get the veggies, from a financial standpoint, you know, how much does it cost to get them, and from a health standpoint. We want to outperform the current standard in every way possible. And so, you know, when you outperform an incumbent system, that incumbent system will shrink and potentially eventually go out of business. You know, I don't think FarmBot is ever going to completely replace current ag systems by any means, because I think there's always going to be a time where, you know, you're traveling and your hotel maybe doesn't have a FarmBot, so you know you're going to go and buy veggies, you're going to go out to eat or something like that. So as much food as FarmBot can grow, it's not going to completely replace more traditional ag. But as far as, you know, the fresh veggies go, I think it can make a pretty big impact, and that will definitely, you know, take away some jobs over time. It's important to note, though, that most of the farming and agriculture jobs are already gone. Only 2% of Americans are farmers. That's down from like 60% 100 years ago. So for the most part, all those jobs have already been lost. And we've moved on to, you know, different professions. So I'm not too worried about FarmBot giving a rise in unemployment or anything like that. If anything, it's going to minimize the number of jobs that, to be frank, a lot of people don't want anymore, which is, you know, backbreaking labor in the California sun. And it's going to, you know, replace that with opportunities like in tech jobs.
So I have an idea for the future of the FarmBot, which I don't know, you probably thought of it, but I'm going to throw it out there because this occurred to me. I realized recently that Google uses a company, and I don't recall the name of the company offhand, but it's a turnkey hydroponic lettuce growing system that they are customers of. So the way this company works is, you know, you hire them or you pay for their service, and they bring a tractor trailer to your parking lot. And inside that trailer is everything you need to grow hydroponic lettuce and other certain specific types of produce, which Google apparently is using in some of their cafeterias and so on. And what's cool about it is that it puts food growing into a parking lot, and it's super turnkey. So a company like Google, which really doesn't have time to grow lettuce, can just grow lettuce anyway without any knowledge. And your product is like that too, but your product isn't portable. I'd love to see a FarmBot product that is sold by you or someone else that is essentially comes with everything, including the soil itself. So it's essentially on a trailer, and you bring the whole thing. It's already set up, built, probably has a covered wagon type of cover if it's in Minnesota or whatever, so it can grow tomatoes in the winter or whatever. And it's just turnkey. You just buy it, and they come and they drop it, and you hook up the electricity and the water or whatever. And off it goes. You don't even have to have dirt. Because I would imagine, for example, that when you do the FarmBot, there's probably some construction involved to make sure that the rails are straight and level and all that kind of stuff. Have you ever thought of something that turnkey?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you know, FarmBot Genesis is the first FarmBot. It's a kit. It definitely requires some construction. You got to make sure those rails are straight and this and that and the other thing. But eventually, you know, we hope to offer all sorts of different kits. One that, you know, doesn't require a raised bed. You can just kind of plop it on the ground, you know, maybe stake it down. One that is better for like a balcony in an apartment, as well as one that comes pre-made on a trailer and has like a built-in greenhouse, and it's all fully assembled, and, you know, it's your portable farm for kind of the nomad lifestyle, or the person who has a tiny house who has, you know, this house that they're able to move because it's on a trailer, and they also have their farm that they can move because it's on a trailer. So absolutely, there's all sorts of possible FarmBot ideas out there. It's just a matter of time and, you know, people and resources before those become a reality.
So what's next for your company? What do you see doing with your company itself within the next couple of years?
Sure. So, you know, like I said, we just debuted our first product with our crowdfunding campaign, and that's really going to fund the next phase of research and development for us and allow us to bring the cost of the FarmBot down and allow us to develop some new, larger kits that are more capable. So for us, it's really going to be about two things. One, scaling our company, so that we can do more R&D at a faster rate and improve the software and the hardware and all of that stuff. And two, about bringing new products to market, you know, bringing lower cost FarmBots to the market, bigger ones, to reach a wider audience.
And where should people go to get more information? What is your website?
Yeah, it's farmbot.io.
And by the way, great job on getting the FarmBot. I imagine that's trademarked, right?
It actually is not, and that's kind of intentional. Just like FarmBot isn't patented, the name FarmBot is free to be used by anybody. So if somebody, you know, just like laptop is a generic term, we want FarmBot to be a generic term as well. So another company can pop up that makes FarmBots as well. They would call it FarmBot, not Genesis, but FarmBot XYZ.
Cool. So we can all look forward to FarmBot XYZ and FarmBot Genesis and a whole bunch of other FarmBots in the near future. Rory Aronson, I want to thank you so much for coming on the FatCast.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
I'd love to hear from you. Email your ideas and feedback to mike@elgin.com. Thanks for listening to my weekly food and technology podcast, and don't forget to share it with your friends. My name is Mike Elgin. There goes the FatCast.